I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
The following podcast is a member of the Great Big Owl family.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to episode 3 of the Keith Cheggers podcast. I'm Hannah Norris, and I'm here with my husband.
Hello, world.
That's Carl Donnelly. That's my husband.
Yeah. And, sorry, apologies for that intro that I've just done there. I've lost them.
And as you can hear, we do have a guest, which is what I kept saying I wanted to happen. We are here with comedian, actor, writer, amazing woman, amazing pregnant woman, Felicity Ward.
Hi.
Hello.
So exciting being on the real pointy end of things, like we're at complete opposite ends of the spectrum.
Yeah, I'm at week 8 and you are?
Week 38.
Wow. Jesus. Yeah. Mary and Joseph.
Yes, it is. And that, and well, look, I was going to say, there's so much I didn't know anything about pregnancy, even though I've been wanted to be pregnant for a long time.
Yeah.
When you get pregnant, there's no pamphlet. You're like, do I see a doctor? But I didn't know from 37 weeks they're considered full term in the UK.
Oh, really?
Right.
So different in other countries?
I think in – I've got a feeling in America it might be 38
right.
weeks.
Yes.
And in France, I found this out, that you don't get a due date, you get a due week.
That's nice. Ah. It's the French way, isn't it?
Isn't it?
Weirdly,
around this time.
Last episode, episode 2, we were talking about how Hannah had read a book called Why French Kids Don't Throw Food.
French children don't throw food.
Yeah, yeah. And I read it previous to last week's episode, and that they do describe their like pregnancy, the actual birth, the aftermath, or raising children as it's called. the French way of doing things is so different to the British and American way. It does feel a lot more laissez-faire, I suppose, is the
French word for it.
Yeah.
Faux pas that no.
So that's exactly why I started this podcast, because that thing of going, becoming pregnant, which I'm starting to be able to say. I've been kind of going, I'm sort of maybe having a baby kind of. Blah. But when I got myself in this situation.
Which is how she previously has been saying it.
You mean speaking to your dad? Well, she's got herself in quite a situation.
No, I have told him, but I'm not in those words. Just not knowing anything. And so wanting to talk to people who, mostly I could only think of people who had already had children that I knew. And the moment I thought of you and that you were right in the midst of it.
Mate.
30 weeks ahead as we now.
Yes.
Yeah.
12 days to go.
Wow.
I know.
So we had a scan, on an 8-week scan, and immediately everything's fine. And the doctor said, okay, so now you need to decide where you're going to have birth, give birth.
Yeah. Have birth. Yes. The doctor wasn't particularly
like to have
good.
Birth?
But yeah, we talked about this on the way home, how it almost shocked us.
Yeah.
Because we've been doing IVF, right? So that's sort of, I suppose it's not the normal process where you just get pregnant and you find out, oh, we're pregnant or I'm pregnant, and then we're going to have a baby. And then you go and you start having things. But because it's been from such an early stage before Hannah was pregnant, like I suppose we've always felt like we're just being looked after.
Yeah, but it's so structured the whole way.
So actually that was the first time they've gone, right, you're pregnant, see you later. And we literally looked at each other like, what? We've got to have a baby.
But
yeah. No one there to hold our hand anymore.
Yes.
So. Well, we, this may or may not have to be edited. I'll speak to my husband about it.
Yeah.
But we tried for a while and then so we went to the doctor and they said, you know, if you've been trying for more than 6 months, we can refer you.
Yeah.
And didn't really say what it was about. I was like, okay, cool, refer us. So we got this referral and we had a date to go to the hospital, and we moved flats in that time. So we didn't get any of the literature of what we were getting a referral for, and it was for IVF.
Right.
Yeah.
And but we didn't know that until we turned up, and then we had such an awful person that we spoke to.
Oh, really?
They made me cry.
What was their just in their tone or the language?
Yeah, all of it. They said because we turned up and I didn't really know what
were you supposed to fill out loads of forms and
We filled out some forms, but she was just very sort of not even decent. She was very cold and like we're an inconvenience for her day, which is like kind of okay, but also kind of not, because the reason that you're there is because you're trying to do something and it's not working and you feel very vulnerable.
Mm.
Anyway, when she got in there, she said, "You know, do you smoke?" And I said, "Oh, look, full disclosure," and this was in May or something, I said, I quit last year. I said, "But I've probably had in the last year, I've probably had 6 cigarettes." And she dropped a pen and she put a hand in her face, her face in her hand, and she said, "We cannot offer you this treatment if you are still smoking." And I said, "We don't even know what we're doing here and what treatment you're offering us." And then I literally had to say, "I feel very vulnerable. Is there a more gentle way that you can speak to me?"
Yeah.
That's good. That's good that you felt like you could say that, because
I was just like, what are the options? And then I had to get an internal ultrasound from her. So it was just beautiful. But we sort of went through the process and we put in a complaint and we got an earlier consultation for our next consultation.
Good.
Yeah.
And then it sort of got to it the weeks that we were supposed to start IVF.
Yeah.
We just got married, then we went on honeymoon, then we moved house, and that all happened within 2 weeks. And I just said to Chris, I'm like, I can't do the emotional thing.
Yeah.
I can't. Because I also didn't know that it was daily injections for 2 weeks and that your hormones can go absolutely ballistic and stuff like that.
Not just 2 weeks, if it carries on, it ended up, how long did you end up doing them for?
Well, we have, then you do bum injections. Ooh. And then I'll now, but one that's, of those. That's
which I took, I had to administer the bum injections naturally.
But now
it's easier. Harder for Hannah to,
very tricky to reach around.
Moved on to pessaries now.
Oh, okay.
I did my first couple this morning.
Yep.
Okay.
Up the vagina.
So is that ongoing medication?
Progesterone that I have to keep doing for the first trimester.
Okay.
Yeah. When we went in the other day and about the bum injections, she was like, "Are you still doing those? Oh, you don't have to do those. We can put you on the pessaries." You're like,
but we love the bum.
No, I genuinely don't. I felt like the couple of times where it hurt you more than you, normal. Like now and again, I just
hurt you too.
I mean, no, every day it hurt. I've got PTSD, and I will do for a long time. But it's but it was a necessary thing to do.
Yeah, and I was fine. I was like, oh, okay. Well, if you want to, yeah. She said some women come there and they can't walk properly. They're in so much pain, and I was like, oh no, it hasn't been like that for me, which is really lucky. But that's quite amazing that you got to that stage so quickly that suddenly it was gonna be IVF. You know,
we didn't really know that's what we were there for.
Yeah.
But also with the NHS, it can be such a long wait process, which it was. So we were trying for a while.
Yeah.
And then we got this, you know, from the first time we got the referral to the time that it was, you know, 10 months.
Yeah.
So it's not that short a time on top of the time we've already been trying. And then I didn't want to do it then. And then we just sort of stopped that idea.
Yeah.
And then this just happened spontaneously at the beginning of this year. And it was, I'd been away in Australia for 6 weeks with my family, and because I hadn't been out there for ages, and then came back, and it literally happened in the first weekend that I was back. And I was only back for 3.5 weeks before I went back out to Australia for 5 weeks. So that was a surprise.
Yes.
Yeah.
And
so you were in Australia when you found out?
No, the week before.
Right.
So you found out you were pregnant here, and then you left.
Then a week later, and I called the doctor. I'm like, "Hey, can I fly? Because I didn't know anything at all." She's like, "How long are you?" And I'm like 3.5-4 weeks. Also didn't know, which I'm sure many listeners know, that they take your starting date from the first day of your last period, not the date of conception, which makes no sense to me.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah, you told me that. And again, I had no idea about this.
Well, because I learned it as well, because you just assume it's from when you've conceived and then that's how long the pregnancy is. But the fact that it's from I guess, when the egg's released.
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
That's the starting of the journey.
Yeah, which is...
Of the pregnancy journey.
I just feel like a lot of pregnancy is gossip. Like mm-hmm. I've learned at least 60% of what I know through gossip.
Mm. Tell me.
So when I was in Melbourne, I remember running into Katie Minchin.
Yeah.
And she was 5 months pregnant and she was like, oh, I had a nap this afternoon. I slept on my back for about 20 minutes. If, you know, I know that we're not supposed to. I'm like, sorry, what? Can you just say that?
So and you're meant to be sidewards.
Sidewards.
You couldn't be face down.
From
why? Just sort of like humped well, over them.
You can for a while.
Yeah.
I think after 20 weeks, so what happens is at the base of your spine, there's a whole bunch of arteries and one goes straight to your heart, which feeds the umbilical cord and placenta.
So you just don't want to put pressure on that.
So if you put pressure on that, it slows the blood flow down to the baby, which is wild. And
comprende.
I have like this little raised, like a little mound above on my sacrum, and I think that's where the veins are.
Yeah.
It's so like...
Are we going to look at it now?
Yeah, if you want to. I mean, it's not great podcasting.
Oh, yeah. I can see the mound.
I can see it. Yeah. You got a little mound.
Yeah, little mound. It's what happens to your body is fucking incredible. I am like, I've never been more impressed at anything in my entire life.
Well, this is something that I think you're treating it without trepidation, mostly excitement about things.
Yeah, I don't feel fearful.
But because we listen to, and you're reading the book of, I can't remember her name.
Millie something or other. Birth is a feminist issue.
Yeah, children. And it's basically, I heard her on a podcast and said to Hannah, you should listen to this. And it's about that reshaping or changing the way people talk about pregnancy, because you only ever hear about the negatives, really, don't you? And especially with birth as well.
Yes.
And she was saying actually that's a lot led by the medical side of things, where and that's quite a male-led industry. And actually she was saying you need to sort of almost, there needs to be a reclamation from women to talk about the positives of pregnancy and all that.
Mate, I want to go and talk about it in schools. I don't think there is anything more sci-fi that anyone can do on this planet.
Yeah.
It's the wildest shit that's ever happened to me. I can't believe we treat it with such nonchalance. I know that women do it every day and people do it every day. Sure. That doesn't make it any less exceptional.
Yeah.
Do you know that so we have 50% more blood than we did?
I did learn that.
Isn't that so great?
Yeah.
And we did this NCT classes, which I didn't know that they were a thing.
Yeah, and that's what you, when we were messaging the other day, you said you were NCT classes all weekend. I was
I think it's called National Child Trust. They're like a charity organisation. You pay for the courses, but they're a weekend course where you meet up with people who are due around the same date as
okay,
you.
Okay, that's nice.
And then they just go through some things about birth that you might not have known. They go through your birthing options and labor and, there's lots of hetero couples there, and sometimes partners don't know. They want to know more and they can read more, but sometimes they're not on the same page as their partners.
Of course, yeah.
And so it's really cool to sort of connect to a bunch of people that are due about the same time, that you can go, hey, I'm freaking out about this, and you get a little WhatsApp group at the end.
Yeah.
And but what one of the things that the teacher did was she passed around, she said, this is how much blood your wives are carrying, extra blood. This is how much amniotic fluid she's carrying. This is the weight of the baby, and they were like presents.
Yeah.
So we were like feeling this all, and she's like, this is how much extra fat. This is what the milk will like. And so it's for all the time that I'm like, you know, I if I'm perfectly honest, before I was pregnant, sometimes when like pregnant women were walking around, I'm like, all right, mate, it happens every day.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. And now I'm like, I am so sorry. Yeah. I have the utmost respect for you.
Yeah.
That I've put on 20 kilos, which is like.
Well, that's it. You've got a very slim frame.
Yes.
You can see this baby.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So I've put on like 3 stone.
Yeah. Wow.
And it's because it's blood and it's fluid. And this is so embarrassing. I didn't know this, that when you fall pregnant, this is so embarrassing. I'm 39. I thought you just always had a placenta and it just like activated when that's built from scratch.
I didn't think that.
No.
But I didn't know. Still don't really know. It just grows, right?
Your body just goes, oh, do you need a placenta?
Here you go.
I'm the uterus. I'm on it. I got it covered.
Because when does that, you told me about this yesterday.
I think, right now, like at week 8, moving on from embryonic stage. So I think it's about just the placenta is about to start growing.
But in terms of like not knowing, like I think we might have even talked about it last week about when we had the first scan. And it was what week was that?
Week 7 one.
Yes. And the one basically with the heartbeat. They showed us. It's so tiny that you could see the heart beating. Yeah. And I didn't know. I was like, it won't be like a heart until like 25 weeks.
Yeah, yeah.
Literally they showed it to me and I couldn't believe what I was seeing.
And I had one at 6 weeks because I went out to Australia and I'd done the test here. So I was like 3 or 4 weeks pregnant when I did the test. And then when I went out to Australia, I thought, I feel like I should have a GP here or something because I'm going to be here for. And he said, look, let's just. I did a test and he's like, yep, you're definitely pregnant. He goes, I wouldn't mind doing a scan. So that we did a 6-week scan. Had to pay for it. That was new. Forgot about the God bless our NHS.
Yeah.
So I had to Skype Chris while I was getting the first scan.
Yeah.
And then at 10 weeks I had a small bleed.
Yeah.
And so I had to get one at 10 weeks. And they're the shape of a person. But because it's not, there's nothing to compare sizes to, you go, oh, my God, there's a full put when it's like a thumbnail.
Yeah.
But it's the shape. It's the silhouette. It's just absolute madness. And like watching how active he was at 10 weeks, I said, is this normal? Because he was like jerking his back and doing tumbles. I'm like, what the fuck is going on?
Yeah, right.
And they're like, yeah, they're really active at this stage. I'm like, that's nuts. It's just nuts.
2 weeks away.
Yeah.
It's going to be doing that.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Yeah.
And you can feel the baby at different points. And, I mean, I had your curiosity at your stage of the pregnancy, but did, let's say, nothing about it until, I don't know, a month ago, something like that. I had, it was Chris who was my husband who was, he got a book, Pregnancy for Men. And he'd be reading me out bits. I'm like, can you say that bit again? I didn't quite catch that.
Yeah. No, because we ended up having this scan last week because the one before they'd said they thought the heartbeat was a bit slow.
Mm-hmm.
And so to come back in, and that's that, like you saying you had a bleed at 10 weeks, that kind of thinking something might be going wrong.
Oh, assuming.
Yeah.
And going back in this week and she was like, oh, no, the heartbeat's perfect. Yeah. It's 160. Last week, it was a different doctor we saw this week, and she was like, last week it was 120, which is perfect as well. Like, I would only call someone back in if it was under 100, nothing to worry about.
Yeah, the doctor the week before was just slightly overcautious.
Which is wonderful.
Which is great. Yeah. But, yeah, I think it just put us slightly – there was a little tiny bit of edge.
Just that reality check that
something could potentially go wrong.
It's happening, but things might not, or you might have complications.
Well, when I was in Australia, I was DJing and I was like dancing around and there's a part of me in my head that's like, are you going to have a miscarriage? Like, are you just, are you killing your unborn child or, unborn fetus at that point? Because I just didn't know anything and it was all fine. It turns out I have a polyp. This is, it's a pregnancy podcast. Let's get into it.
I know about polyps.
I have an endometrial polyp, which is kind of just like a growth that's very, very sensitive. And so I had a couple of bleeds during the pregnancy.
So that just got something pushed on that and there was bleeding.
Yeah, it's super, super sensitive. And that was really scary. Yeah. And then so there's sort of some preventative measures that we have had to take, unfortunately, to stop any agitation because the polyp itself doesn't affect the pregnancy. But if there's blood, sometimes that can stimulate the cervix and then you go into early labour.
Right. Yeah.
So I had a big bleed at about 28 weeks that was almost unprompted.
Wow.
And I felt really scared. I'm like, oh, no.
Yeah.
But I also know after 24 weeks they're viable, that they can
– yeah.
That's a pretty good – rate.
Good sized baby that they can.
Yeah, well, they've got a pretty good success rate if you've got a baby that's that premature.
I think a comedian friend of ours, John Hastings, was born like amazingly early as well.
Yeah, and
he's turned out to be
a huge,
absolute giant of a man. Yeah.
What a head. What an absolute noggin. Yes.
So yeah. I think it shows that, really early births, I think people assume they're going to be tiny. And
well,
actually,
his mum might have been lucky as well that she didn't have to give birth to that massive baby.
She's tiny as well. So, yeah.
She's as big as a paperclip. So we went in and the consultant came in and it was like 1 o'clock in the morning and he said, it could be the polyp, but just to be sure, we're going to give you a steroid injection on the off chance that you go into labor. And I was just like, I don't have a spare pair of underpants with me, let alone
a breast pad, birth plan
at 28 weeks. Absolutely not, mate. Literally, I've not even finished my hypnobirthing videos. And that's the plan, is to do hypnobirthing.
Yeah. Hypnobirthing is, it's like the breathing techniques and all stuff like that.
It's more or less meditation and NPL. That's NLP. So it's really just, as you were talking about, like we only hear sort of negative birth stories and stuff like that. And that's what's portrayed in movies and TV. And just that was something that I didn't know when we did our antenatal class, was like sometimes your water doesn't even break and you go into labor. And they have to break your water when you're in there. And I'm like, that is not what the TV shows no. are.
Do you remember what day was it when we were going to the IVF clinic where we walked past the woman who was heavily in labour?
Yeah.
It was such funny timing. Like, I think it was like the day.
It might have been when we'd had the eggs transferred back in,
so
I think.
They'd, you know, it was a fertilised embryo. It was an egg.
Yeah,
a fertilised egg. So, and it was going back into Hannah.
Mm.
And it was all done. And we leave. And now it's like, right, let's see if you're pregnant. And as we walked out, we walked into the hospital to pick up a prescription. And it was a woman holding onto the wall going, ah. We were like, okay.
We both, again, we looked at each other like,
this is really happening. Yeah. And the list of things that you are supposed to do beforehand and what week you're supposed to do it and what weeks that, you know, things that are happening to you, and then what you're supposed to have ready, and, you know, you were supposed to have a hospital bag packed from 35 weeks or something like that.
Have you picked your
luggage? I'm writing notes.
Yes. Mine is actually packed.
Right.
I was very proud of myself.
I suppose just saying like that, this is sort of why I think when Hannah told me she wanted to do this podcast, was basically because like, of that, I suppose a lot of books just have a like slightly regimented breakdown of the weeks you're meant to do things. But then you talk to anyone who's gone through it and everything always slightly changes and it's very individual. So I suppose, was yours, in terms of like the scheduling that is laid out when you're told, right, this is probably what will happen? Was it pretty straightforward? Or
I think I mean, there was a lot of avoidance in my side of things. I got back from Australia and then and then did some weekend touring with the Guilty Feminist, and then I was 12 weeks pregnant on the first day that I started rehearsals for a play.
Oh, yeah.
So I rehearsed for the play for 3 weeks, 6 days a week, and I was so tired I would just fall asleep in rehearsal sometimes, like just pass out. And then the play was 6 nights a week. And
I came and saw it.
Yes, in high heels, and there was like three short dance.
The fight scenes, that's because I'm an actor as well. Like, I was watching that and watching you pregnant do that. Those fight scenes and the dances and stuff, and I was like, it's full on. Like, I loved it. I loved it because I could see you doing it, and you could do it. But there's that extra bit in the back of your head going, oh, fuck, it's full on. Your body's doing that, and you're doing this at the same time.
Well, there was a part of me that I'm like, well, you don't have any choice, because I always think that I just have to do things.
Yeah.
For as rebellious and mouthy as I seem as a person, I actually adore structure,
authority,
rules, authority. Give me a plan. Lovely stuff.
Yeah.
But what that means is, on the flip side of that, is I feel like I don't have choices to say, I can't do that. Yeah. And if anything, when I told my director, I thought he would be – they were more understanding about my pregnancy than I was.
Yeah.
And I didn't, because the other thing is, they talk about when in your first trimester, they talk about, people ask you about morning sickness and your cravings, and that's it. And I'd never heard about how exhausting it could be. And it was like debilitatingly so. And I felt like I was stupid because I was so tired.
Yeah.
Not like, oh, of course. And if it was anyone else, I'd go, Yeah, yeah, you're making a person, you know, that catch-all phrase.
Well, that's what I've been trying to say that to you a lot in the last week or two, because you've been tired.
Yeah.
And sometimes you sort of, you can maybe suggest it's a negative, and I try and stress it. Just lie, just, it's fine. You don't have to do anything.
But I think there is that thing as well. I don't know if for you, but the idea now that, you know, being sort of superwomen, that I can be pregnant and be doing a play and dancing on stage and doing all this stuff, rather than sort of going into lockdown and just being pregnant for the term of your pregnancy.
Which
of not letting it stop you, of not letting it
get
in the way or whatever.
Like it's, a feminist act to continue to operate the way you did before your body was literally seized by a person that needs to be grown. You know, like that's not a big deal. Like that's not stressful or requires a little bit different energy.
And do you think, did you feel that? And do you think you've your behaviour changed through?
Yeah. So once the play had finished, then we had a week in Montreal at the end of July or whenever it is. Then we had a week's holiday in New York. And then I didn't have much work in August, and I was so much happier. Even though my energy came back at like 23 weeks or something like that, or maybe it was before then. But from then on, I was like, oh, I think you need to chill out a bit. Yeah. And then when I had the bleed at 28 weeks, I'm like, oh, I've got to cancel everything.
Yeah.
And I still forget that I have it sometimes because I bump it on things. I'm like, oh, yeah, that's right. No, that's absolutely happening.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's the physical stuff. I found, because we moved house when I was 34 weeks, I cannot tell you the frustration that I would just like push a box out of the way with my foot and I would pull ligaments all underneath my stomach just from pushing a box with my foot. I couldn't do and still can't do anything that I used to be able to do. And that's a really, for someone who is, you know, almost obstructively independent.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's very humbling.
My mate bought a toaster. We go through celebrities' Amazon purchase histories so you don't have to. Keep calm and love Dom Jolly novelty keyring and fridge magnets.
Yeah, I love that.
The G-spot.
The good vibrations, guys.
Green dot laser sight rifle gun scope.
I've bought that quite a lot of times, I think.
Right, okay. The sex doctor's guide to keeping it hot.
Ah, interesting.
Did another child come along 9 months later?
Yeah.
Loads of great apps up now, and new ones dropping every Monday. That's My Mate Bought a Toaster from Great Big Al.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
At the moment, I'm sort of looking at Comedy Festival next year and working and looking at maybe doing some road show, like at the moment, sort of sent an email yesterday going, do I want to do some touring after that? That would take me up to, I think, 35 weeks. In my head, I'm like, I think I can do it. And then I'm like, am I being crazy? Is that crazy? Yeah.
And even then, I yesterday sort of said, well, you know, you should maybe have a little think about how you'll feel at that time. But I didn't want to be the sort of like,
but you said,
you should be lying in bed. Like, I don't want to put any.
But saying, have a think about how you'd feel, I have no idea.
Exactly. Yeah.
Well, I can literally tell you.
Well, yes, please tell her what she will feel like, Felicity.
Your want to work, and I'm a workaholic, your want to work from about 25 weeks on, like I couldn't muster a fuck to give about work.
Yeah.
And the more, and I had work to do and deadlines to finish, So I think I finished at 36 weeks.
Yeah.
And they were only writing deadlines. I did one gig in like the last month. You're exhausted.
Yeah.
You're physically, as I said, like I'm carrying around 20 extra kilos.
Yeah.
And that's not just the weight, that's the energy that's been, and your sleep is like, I cannot. This is the other thing. I was speaking to a friend of mine and she had plans to work right up to Christmas and she's due in early January. She's like, you know, I've got to work to the end. And I said, this is the only time you're ever not going to be a parent again.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
that like this time before this one comes along, like this is my last time to like enjoy being in my house and enjoy being with my husband and like eating dinner, just the two of us.
Yeah.
And we want kids so badly, but like you don't feel like working.
Yeah.
You feel, I can't speak for everyone. I can only speak for myself, but especially having moved, the thing that was most upsetting to me was that we haven't got bookshelves yet, so I can't like put the books in the nice order and make the cot and like this weird feels like 1950s patriarchy bullshit.
Yeah.
It's real. It's true. It's I hate it. I hate admitting it. All I want to do is nest.
Yeah.
That's all I want to do.
Yeah.
I want to get the lint roller and get dust off the couch. Never done that in my life. Never done it.
Well, I definitely, for me, in terms of the fact that the IVF has been successful, well, I definitely made space in my life for that to be a possibility.
Mm-hmm.
For someone who likes being busy and has been touring a lot this year, that I was like, right, I have to be at home. I'm going to be here. And I kind of took time out from things I'd normally be doing and did bits of nesting, you know, like things are quite clean in my my shelves and my cupboards and things like that, and going, okay, now I need to make space if this is going to be a reality.
Yeah.
And I have to have the space to welcome a child into this into this place. But I'm also very aware of that, making the most of the time pre being a parent.
It's just like there's definitely an element that comes with, I think, working in the comedy industry in any regard, that there's this hero sort of attitude that people want to be respected, like, oh, look how much she's working.
Yeah.
Look how much he's working.
Yeah.
And it's just not that important when this is happening.
Yeah.
It's just like I actually felt it really early on where I just was like, oh, work. Oh, I got to do this for ages more. And you know how much I've worked and how much I love working and I love stand-up. And I used to love traveling and touring, and it's this, you know, badge of honor that I did six festivals back to back and I've only eaten a biscuit in that time. And, you know, like there's this sort of machismo that comes with it. And I just cannot encourage other people enough to quit work as quickly as you can.
Yeah.
It's like purely on a sleeping level, the idea of touring could bring me to tears if I thought about it.
Yeah.
We've had to buy a new mattress. We're going to talk about pillow admin.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Write it down.
The number of different pillows that you will try over your pregnancy to get comfortable.
Oh, wow.
Just under your head, or are you putting it in other places?
Oh,
under on your back.
Nothing to do with your head.
Legs.
I've got, so at the moment, I've got two regular pillows, your standard. I've got a firm one and a soft one.
Of course.
Classic.
Classic.
That's for everyone. And then as time wore on, I'm a side sleeper, so that's fine.
Mm-hmm.
I would occasionally sleep on my back, sometimes on my stomach, but sleeping on my side wasn't a problem. But then what would happen is there's so much weight on my hips. I had a firm mattress. I would wake up every day and it would feel like I had bruises on each hips.
Yeah.
Because you got to turn every 2 hours because you're waking up going, oh, my God, I'm in so much pain. You'll also get huge leg cramps. That'll happen. I don't know when that starts happening, but it's not ideal. You wake up and you're, like, silently screaming because you don't want to wake up your partner. You're just going, and the impulse, I've never really had cramps before.
Yeah.
The impulse is to stretch it out, which only makes it worse. So you sort of got to, you've got to flex, not point. And anyway, so we got a pillow that, there's all different kinds of pillows you can get. The most popular one is the full body horseshoe.
Yeah.
That goes between your knees and your chest and your head and then behind you. You're literally cocooned.
So not just those normal kind of triangular pillows.
So like that like a boomerang triangle pillow, but for your whole
body.
Your whole body, it comes down on both sides.
What?
So because your pelvis.
It's like a fat scarf.
Yes.
Fat long scarf.
A
stuffed scarf that you. It's like if you were lying down on your side and you just drew an outline of the person's a rough outline of the person's body. It's literally a long horseshoe.
Wow.
Yeah.
Because your pelvis opens up,
mm-hmm.
and so when you're sleeping on your side with your knees together, it puts pressure on your pelvis.
Yeah.
So you've got to sleep with your legs apart, so it takes that pressure off.
Right.
Another wonderful side effect is this is – I have not shared this with anyone yet.
This is as good as amazing.
Nor have I had this fed back to me by other women. My tits are so massive sometimes I have to sleep with a pillow between them.
Yeah.
Because your lungs just get smaller and smaller and crushed because your uterus doubles or triples in size and then all the organs move up basically under your rib cage.
Yeah.
So for the last – 2 or 3 months, every time I lie down, for the first 5 minutes, it feels like someone is pinching my jugular veins. I just can't breathe properly. It's awful. So that was – so then we got a pillow that was – now, this one's difficult to describe. It's like a pool noodle on one side, like a long – and then like a shorter one on the other side. So it's got two sides.
Mm-hmm.
But then in the middle, rather than having a pillow connecting them, it just has a piece of material. So you lie on the material.
Right.
And what it does is it just gives your back a little bit of support and then you still get the between the knees.
Yeah, I got it.
Between the boobs if you want it. The third pillow that we bought is simply just a little triangular wedge. And I started using that maybe about 2 or 3 months ago because the weight of my stomach was so much that it hurt when I'd lie on my side because it was like a huge appendage.
Yeah, cool. Yeah.
Like a bowling ball.
So like a doorstop underneath.
It's like, it's that's a perfect description.
Right.
So all this stuff is great, except you then have to turn over every couple of hours.
Yeah.
So, oh, and then my new one is someone gave us a breastfeeding pillow, which is a pillow you put on your lap when you're breastfeeding.
Yeah.
But that's actually done a really great job of what the other pillows were doing. So I'm sleeping with a breast pillow between
the other tit pillows.
Yeah, yeah. I think I've made peace with the tits that I'm just just not going to be able to breathe for a while.
That's interesting as well, though, the fact that you're waking up every couple of hours, that's sort of putting your body into the fact that you'll be waking up once the baby's here.
Yeah, so it's also – that's just
getting used to
primal
sleep.
Yeah. Evolutionary thing. It's more to do with – it's more common with – rather than the turning, even though that's a thing, is getting up and going to the toilet.
Yeah.
So that's a part of your body preparing you to be awake every two hours.
Twice last night. Didn't wake up either time.
I mean, luckily I'm a very sound sleeper. So
lucky.
When you're waking up with your cramps. Yeah, we got a new alarm clock because we don't want our phones in the room.
Great.
So we got an alarm clock that has a half an hour increase in light.
Oh, yes.
And then the radio comes on.
Lovely stuff.
And the first day we bought it this week, put it on, just slept through the whole thing.
Yeah, you did. I was awake.
Great stuff.
Literally the brightest light. It was about a foot from my head. We put it on my side of the bed. Radio playing, not a clue.
Oh, and they were talking about Tottenham, which is his favourite football
team. Yeah, I didn't even wake up when that, you'd think Tottenham would be a trigger word.
That was, that's just...
just straight through. Didn't even have a late night. I was well slept.
How I would describe myself before I went to bed is rested.
Are there things that you wish that you'd known earlier on? Or what other things?
Do you know, I asked this on Twitter and I was like, what do you wish you knew? What do I wish that I knew? That's write everything down.
Yeah.
I will say, I wish I wrote everything down. I've written lots of things down, but when you get to the next bit, you're constantly having new symptoms.
Yeah.
And you're constantly sort of surprised by things. So you forget what was happening a couple of months ago. Someone in the antenatal class said that in their first trimester, they were washing their hair in the bath and they started crying because their arms were so sore they couldn't wash their hair and they had to get their partner to come and wash their hair for them. And I was like, fuck, I remember I couldn't hold a cup of tea up. Like for the first 16 weeks, I'd hold a cup of tea up and have a sit and I'm like, God, I've got to put this down. Because my body was just drained. And I suppose it's the it's the normalization of those symptoms where you don't think I can be quite hard on myself, and I know that that's what everyone says. They're like, I'm a bit of a perfectionist, which I obviously have my issues with. But it was really hard being as gentle as I needed to be,
like
on
being
myself.
Delicate, being careful,
and accepting that I can't do things that I used to be able to do.
Yeah.
Other people might be able to do that, and that's great. You know, like there's lots of forums where women are like, I worked up till 39 weeks, and I'm like, I am so stoked for you. I worked up to 30. I crawled across the line of 36 weeks as a writer.
Yeah.
You know, I wish that I had listened to people that said, take it gently and take it slowly and enjoy it without having to, like, I have the same thing,
yeah.
Like where I want to just be able to do everything, and people go, wow, if she didn't have a bump, you wouldn't even know she was pregnant.
Yeah.
Like it's a bad thing to be pregnant or for that to create any impediment. What is going on inside of me is a fucking miracle.
Yeah.
It's insane.
It's absolutely insane. Like he's kicked a couple of times. I'll see the next time he does it, if he does it, you know, feel if you like. I'm also one of those women who loves getting my friends to touch their stomach.
I had my first stomach touch the other day.
Did you?
When Chris came over, he was just like,
did he ask?
No.
You got to ask Chris.
Yeah.
You got to ask whether you want it or not as the owner.
Yeah.
The other person the still needs to
It's
ask.
So early, I think he still thought of it as sort of just a slightly different hug.
Yeah.
giving him the benefit of the doubt.
People.
That sounds like a rape apologist.
Yeah, that sounds
like it was a different kind of
my
hug.
Client.
Look, I know him very well, and I can say hand on heart, he would never.
And as with every other case I've represented him, he's just
he's
a hugger.
Hug.
He's a hugger.
He's a hugger, okay? What else do I wish that I knew? So hard to even think about.
Did you get cravings or anything? Because I mean, this is like,
oh, I really wanted one. I didn't. I got apple juice. So pathetic.
You've been liking a bit of apple juice.
A little juices and kiwi fruits, but I don't. They're not. They don't feel like cravings.
What was the food you saw on MasterChef that you suddenly went, I weirdly would like
omelet.
That? An omelet. And
yeah, sure.
You know, that's eggs.
Vegan. Oh yeah, of course. There was one time again when I was in Melbourne, and I had a. There was a loose meeting that I had at like 12:30, and it was 12:15, and I walked past this ramen shop. I'm like, I'm going to have to miss this meeting, and just went in there and like urgently needed ramen.
Yeah.
And then had to say, excuse me, I'm pregnant, and so can you just make sure the egg's really cooked? And that's something that you probably will sidestep a lot of the food requirements.
Yeah, exactly. There's none of that cheeses and fish and anything like that. It's like – eating vegan is good for you.
Yeah. And like secretly Googling when you're 8 weeks pregnant, you don't want people to know, and pasteurized and unpasteurized, and asking that stuff in front of your friends. I remember sitting with Tom Allen, and I had to ask if the butter was pasteurized because I don't really know what pasteurized means, if I'm perfectly honest.
Yeah.
But most stuff is pasteurized that's bought in but you know, in Melbourne, lots of things can be homemade and artisanal.
Right. So unpasteurized is like the more sort of, hey, we're just straight from the farm.
Thing.
Right.
And you're like, well, I can't have that, actually.
Yeah. That's good. Well, I mean, I don't think.
That's not going to come up too
much. Not needed for me, but for listeners.
Yeah.
Avoid your non-pasteurized.
Avoid your non-pasteurized. It's such a good question that I have literally.
You can message me and then I'll.
I will.
You can tell me through that way and I can find out anyway.
Yeah.
Because it's like, because they are, because of this thing of like not really knowing anything. Everything you've said today is so interesting anyway. And I've made lots of notes and
Well, it makes, I think it's just, definitely you learn more when you hear it from an actual person rather than reading, like.
Well, that's the thing,
that book about French kids is great. I was reading it. I was like, this is great stuff. But then you actually see parenting in practice and you're like, you can only prepare so much, can't you? Like I did a gig for new parents yesterday. Have you ever done any of those shows when you do it for like, basically the children have to be babies. Under 18 months.
Yeah.
So it's basically parents who haven't really had a chance to get out of the house.
And
they go to a comedy show at 11 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah.
And yeah, there was definitely the oldest kid there was probably, I mean, he must have been getting towards 18 months because he was up and about. And the parents were just, you could see they were still in that phase of almost shadowing him
right,
around the place. They hadn't got to a point of like, oh, he's walking, let him have a wander.
No, until they have the second one. I think someone's told me the first 4 years is just like you every couple of minutes going, are they dead?
Yeah, well, that's because that,
have they killed them?
That book sort of paints this picture of French parents being like, oh, they will just walk around.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
And I read it and I was like, that'll be exactly what I'm like. Oh, I'm just going to be so chill.
Definitely.
I'm going to let it have its own autonomy.
Yeah.
And I'm watching their parents yesterday watching their child run off. And I was like, well, of course you're going to chase after it. It's a tiny person.
Yeah, there's cars around. Not an idiot. One thing that I didn't expect was how traditional some of my ideas are.
Yeah.
And traditional sexist expectations of my partner too, that I would just be sort of doing most of this by myself. And that is not who he is at all, nor has he ever presented as that person. But I just – so if you grew up in a house that had that wasn't as liberal or progressive as you are now, be ready for some old ghosts to come and haunt you about what you expect from your partner. Because my husband's like – I go to bend down. He's like, what are you doing? I'm like, I'm picking that up. He's like, every time you pick something up, it hurts you. Please let me help you. I'm like, oh, okay. And it's just like I really have let him do – a lot, and he wants to do a lot as well, but he does like most of the cooking, nearly all of the cleaning, and that's been going on for months.
Yeah.
And I think that I in my head underplay how significant an impact it has on me physically, or has had, and it's been really nice where I've accepted
help.
Yeah, accepted help and accepted how huge this is.
Yeah.
And it's fucking amazing. It's just amazing. I could talk about it for years. And what was, you know, what was really great was when I started telling people, the people that have young kids are like, text me anytime. I can't wait to. And they just, all they want to do is talk about their pregnancy. They're like, are you doing this? Are you doing that? What about this? And it's, I feel exactly the same way. I feel like a missionary for pregnancy.
Well, then you're the perfect – you've been the perfect guest for us to talk to and for me to find out more stuff from. So, I don't know, maybe we should
– we should probably, yeah, we should probably wrap up. Any, have any further questions? Is there anything that I should think about as, you know –
do the cleaning and do the cleaning and do the cooking.
I'll do all that. But has Chris had to, like – is there things that caught him off guard maybe that to look out for or
– what has been helpful for him is that book is reading physically what's going on for me because, you know, like – oh, P.S. the farts that are coming are the worst thing you've ever smelt.
Well, that's a good idea. Yeah, was there any sort of books you – because I'm doing that classic thing of I'm going to read one book a week about what's –
yeah, sure.
But not all about – like weirdly, the one I'm reading this week is about genetic personality traits, like how much of a child's personality is inherited.
I don't need to read that.
Well, I mean, it's actually – I know we were talking on the way here. I was telling Hannah about it and like – you know, because my parents are pretty messy people. And like, it's actually this book does push the idea that now scientifically it's a lot of your personality traits are genetic. And I was just like, well, this child is in
trouble.
Well,
I'm leaving.
But yeah.
Give him a better chance.
But are there any books that you read along the way that were like, oh, right, this is something I should recommend to?
I can say hand on heart, I've not read a single book this entire pregnancy. I've used the NHS website a lot.
Yeah.
But Chris has read this book called Pregnancy for Men and it's really funny and it's, I mean, like the title is obviously very heteronormative, but what he said is it really helped him, like for the first 6 months, know physically what's happening.
Okay.
And when, you know, when the baby's getting eyeballs and when it's developing its grip reflex and, you know, what it, when the milk comes in and just stuff that he had no idea. Like I didn't know this either, but because you've got all this extra blood, you get broken capillaries really easily.
Mm.
They go as soon as the baby's born. Yeah. So I've got like a little mark above my nose and then I've got a little one on my neck.
Oh, yeah.
They've been there for like 5 or 6 months. because you've got so much blood
pulsing. They almost look like pimples or something.
Yeah, that was just a pimple, that, and I'm a picker, so I've obviously gone a little too deep. I've hit oil in a vein form, and that's my body's like, oh, okay, we're going to stay here. So those will go.
Yeah.
The one thing that I've done, which I'm proud of myself, is I've used bio oil for stretch marks,
yes.
And I haven't got a stretch mark yet.
Wow.
So I moisturized yesterday for the first time. I moisturized my legs and my stomach and my back. I was like, I should probably start doing this early. And then I just felt sticky all day.
Yes. Yeah. Look, well, the oil is worse because it's oil.
Yeah.
So
just when did you start doing that?
You feel like a greased pig.
Yeah.
I think I actually started doing it while I was in Melbourne.
Yeah.
But what I started to do, one, if you get stretch marks, that's like the fucking coolest scar that you can have, because of what you put your body through. But for me, who's a real like, wash my face with a cleanser, put some moisturizer on, Bob's your uncle, that's my beauty regime or whatever.
Yeah.
It's actually a really nice way to, I was going to say the wankiest thing I've probably
done.
Do it.
It's a very nice way to honor your body.
Yeah.
It's a very nice.
That's going to be the tagline.
It's so gross. But like just to go, because I have really dry skin too.
Yeah.
So.
But what your body is doing, then.
Yeah.
Give it some love.
Yeah, it's just, it's a really, like when you, when I can be, like I have real deprivation thinking about lots of stuff. When I'm taking 3 minutes to put oil all over my stomach and my hips and my bum and my boobs, and yes, it stops stretch marks, but it's also saying, you deserve to take, I'm going to take time to say thanks for building this person.
Yeah.
It's just
that,
like,
your body's doing those things. That makes total sense to me.
Yeah, it's something that I used to try to do before I was pregnant, like just even moisturize my arms and legs rather than looking like Frosty the Snowman for 6 months of the year in the UK. So it's like, that's a nice thing for me to go, oh, okay, that's a nice time to spend on yourself.
Yeah. Yes, just reminded me that I saw that other similarity, that both of our families or our immediate families are in Australia.
Mm.
And how do you feel about that, you know?
Awful.
Yeah.
And it's it was the same when we got married, where there's things that you have in your head that your family is just going to be around for.
Yeah.
And they all came over for the wedding, but like making those decisions and asking them questions about how they did it. And so my mum gets here next Thursday.
Yeah.
Which is so great. So she, if he holds out,
yeah,
she'll be here for the birth. And that's like, that's really important to me, and I didn't know how important that was until I fell pregnant.
Yeah.
My sister will never see, she'll never be able to touch me this pregnant.
Yeah.
So when I was out there, I think I was like 10 weeks when I got back to the UK.
Yeah.
So my sister saw me went at like 5 weeks and 9 weeks, but that's not the same as this.
Yeah, yeah.
You know? And this is the first time she's going to be an auntie on this side of the family. Yeah. And, you know, just feeling him kick and all of those things that you want to share. Whether or not you can is a different story. You know, not everyone has functional relationships. And I've been in lots of therapy and recovery to help me have functional relationships with my family. I think the nicest thing is that she's coming and I want her to be here.
Yeah.
And that feels like a safe choice, and I know that that's not for everyone.
Yeah, yeah.
But, yeah, being overseas is and I adore my in-laws. Like, I just love them like family. But there's a part of you that, like, whatever family you have, you still go, oh, but it's that's where this happened to them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that thing about being, because I'm 39 as well, so that thing about being a bit older as well and kind of going, this is like, it feels like a gift to my parents that we're going to have a child, but that, you know, they're not going to see that little person very much. It's going to be every, you know, maybe once a year if we're lucky, and just those things about how much you know that child is going to grow and change and some of those times in between.
I feel like that with my niece. She's 7.5 now, nearly 8. And like, we've had regular Skype contact since she was born. I was in the country when she was born, and then I moved the following year. And like, I remember my sister sent me a video of her doing her first speech at school, reading off palm cards. And I was just crying.
Mm.
One, because she was amazing, but two, I'm like, she doesn't have an auntie there just going, you're the best. Yeah. This is the coolest thing I've ever seen. How have you turned into such a great person? You know, obviously I know why, but she's just and I really feel that when I go home, like she just loves me and I love her and that bond is there. But there are bits where I'm like, oh, my sister isn't going to see my son walk for the first time and they're not just down the road and it's a really big commitment.
Yeah.
For them to come over here, there's two of them that need to come over here. So it's tricky.
Yeah. But like you said, you've got your English family down the road.
Yes.
Which is good.
I think if I can say one more thing, which is this is the thing I can't get my head around. Oh, two things. One, that we're born with all the ovaries we're ever going to have, all the eggs we're ever going to have.
Yep.
That's crazy.
What is that? Someone... I watched a documentary on that a few years ago, and I remember trying to explain it to people. I'm like, you are your grandma. She is in you. You are.
I still don't understand it. Like Hannah tried to describe it, and I didn't know what you were about.
Our grandchildren are in me.
Yes.
Because if it's a girl, the baby or a boy, I don't know.
No.
If it's a girl, the eggs will grow, and those eggs will then become a child.
So our
grandchildren.
And when that child has eggs, I don't understand.
But it's inside me if it's a girl.
But your grandchildren aren't in you.
They'll be inside.
In egg form.
In egg form inside the baby inside me.
Shit.
Yes. Well, that's the other part of this is out of my great-grandmother, my grandmother came, and out of my grandmother, my mother came, and out of my mother, my sister came, and out of my sister, my niece came. Like, it's literal babushka dolls.
Yeah.
Over, 100 years.
Forever.
Forever. Like, on the matrilineal line.
Wow.
Isn't that incredible?
Yeah.
I can't get over it.
Yeah.
Can I ask you a question?
Yeah.
Do you think you'll find out the sex of the baby?
Well, I was actually, because you refer to him as him. We sort of have
don't know yet.
Not thought about it.
We didn't.
One bit.
Yeah. We didn't really think about it. And then I think they can give you like a hint at about 12 or 14 weeks.
Well, I think we were talking about it would be one of them things when they'll probably say it to us when we're getting
we'll probably just make that call then.
Yeah. Well, we have, like, historically on my mum's side, we have girls. We have hundreds and hundreds of girls with the aberration of boys. And we had a junior doctor at about 12 or 13 weeks, and she mentioned something about it being I think she said him, and she went, oh, they. And I was like, I don't know if this is bad practice or not, or it could have been anything. Anyway, I was like, if this is a boy, I want to know because I know how to look after girls.
Yeah.
That's what
we
do.
Yeah.
And I told a couple of friends that we were going to find out, and they said, don't, there's only one true surprise in this world. And, it's one of the, and for me, I'm so glad I found out.
Yeah.
Because I can really bond with the idea of going. Oh.
I don't think I'm a good example would be Christmas time. Once you put presents under the tree, I am a nightmare until Christmas. I need to know what's in that thing. I'm really impatient for surprises. So I think it would be they'd be like, "Do you want to know?" I'd be like, "Yeah,
straight out."
Whatever that makes me want to go. No, not yet. Yeah. Not yet.
But you can hold off as long as you want. Right. You can hold off.
When you're asleep
birth.
One night, I'll do a secret scare. Oh
yeah. you seem trained for
I'm
that.
I'm gonna buy my own ultrasound.
I'm a comedian and part-time sonographer. But it so many people are so glad they didn't find out. For me, I'm really glad we found out. It doesn't change. Like, it's not like we've run out and bought blue clothes or anything like that.
But I still need to start preparing 18 years of outfits.
I mean, it's for me, it's more like, okay, what do I need to prepare for? Because boys and girls have different experiences in the world. And mentally, like, how am I going to moving forward?
Do you think that, have you decided on a name as well? Is that?
We have decided. It was really weird with girls. We had like a short list of six or seven.
Mm.
We could only come up with one.
Oh, cool.
For boys. I tell you off the podcast though.
Yeah, of course.
Just in case.
I'll just say 12 more days until.
I don't have a preference. I genuinely don't. Yeah. Hannah showed me some gender reveal videos where men lose their minds when they find out they're having a son. And I genuinely don't have that instinct at all.
Yeah.
And that's not me trying to be like all hip and cool. Yeah. I just mean genuinely, I to say, yeah, to me, I don't think it would be easier to, like, some, I think it'd be probably, I think boys are a bit more trouble when they're young, you know, they probably take a bit more like guidance. Yeah. Just girls are just smarter from the like early days.
Also conditioned, that's from lots of conditioning.
Yeah, huh? We're socialised more easily.
That's why I mean, I want one who I can socialise very easily. I want one who can control.
From age 14, great. Girls can be a real
fan. Well, and also, and then as I say, I hear some fathers go, then you worry more about your daughter. You know, there's loads of different things, but.
Mia, 34.
But having heard, all that, I don't have a none of that has made me go, well, I would prefer one or the other, or whatever it is, or I'm quite chilled about it all.
Yeah, it's just he just kicked. Happy.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's cool. Just the coolest.
Because we're talking about him.
Yeah, talking about you, mate. Gonna meet you in 12 days. Gonna meet my son.
Wow.
In 12 days.
It's mad.
Isn't that crazy? Because that's the other thing, like. After, I know we've tried to end this podcast about 10 times.
I mean, 13 minutes we've been trying to wrap up.
I don't have a wrap up in me when we're talking about pregnancy. Is there's a point where he's fully functionally alive.
Mm.
And right at the minute, he's just only going to get fatter. That's all he can do is get heavier.
Yeah.
Everything else is done. It's good. He's, you know, his lungs, his eyes, all of his reflexes, they're all there.
Yeah.
So I'm literally just waiting for when he's ready to come out.
Yeah, amazing.
It's just, and he's going to, it was Charlie Baker actually, he said something to me when I was about maybe 6 months pregnant and I just like nearly burst out into tears. We were just getting a coffee. He goes, I don't think you'll mind me saying this. He goes, it's the weirdest thing. They come out and you go, oh, you're here.
Yeah.
Like you've been, you didn't know that you were waiting to meet them, and you meet them, you're like, oh, of course it's you. And
so
he's got like some personality traits already.
Yeah,
totally.
What?
Half and half of the two of you.
What?
Yeah.
It's mad. It's mad.
That's amazing and exciting. And maybe we will wrap it up on that because it's a beautiful way to end. And maybe we will come and talk to you again once he's been around for a bit, and
I'm a bit
further along. Yeah. As you can start practicing your classes and the lectures you're going to give.
Yeah, I'm going to give up comedy and actually just do the school circuit.
Yeah,
talk about pregnancy.
Yeah, perfect. Well, thank you so much, and thanks for having us in your house.
Thanks for everything.
Yeah,
and good luck.
Yeah, good luck.
Heavy Pencil, a new comedy from Great Big Owl, the people who brought you Brian and Roger.
Are you a client?
Yes, I'm a client. I'm the actor Michael Cork.
The Observer called it a lovely thing, wonderfully funny, pitched perfectly, produced with a light touch.
No, I've been taken on as Fliss's assistant.
You're the assistant's assistant.
Yes, if you like.
Heavy Pencil by Anna Crilly and Tony Gardner.